Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us again. It is March 25th. We say that because many of you download and listen to this broadcast. Man, there's a lot of people doing that, an increasing number of people. We've got as a special guest today, Bill Kilmer, Senior Vice President for Legislative and Political Affairs at the MBA. He'll be talking to us about GSE reform, reforms affecting FHA, prospects of mortgage interest rate deduction, what's going to happen with that, and other initiatives that are incentives that could be going away with a massive amount of legislation that's going through there. There's also an interesting thing. There's a massive legislative refinance proposal that's floating around. I can't wait to have Bill on a little bit later in the broadcast. We're excited to be a part of so many of these conferences that are on out there, and I get to be a part of the Oklahoma Mortgage Bankers Annual Conference, April 8th and 9th, and we've got Kent Carter in Oklahoma City on the radio with us to give us a quick update. He stepped out of a luncheon with his update. So, Kent, what you got for us? Good to have you with us. I'm looking forward to being up there. Are you going to clear the snow out before I get there, though?
Thank you, David, for allowing me to come on today. We have no snow today. It's a little breezy, like it might be in Oklahoma or Chicago, but we're doing great. We're excited about the Oklahoma Mortgage Bankers Association Annual Conference. It's here in Oklahoma City, April 8th and 9th, 2 weeks away. Wow. In addition to various training like the NMLS Continuing Education, Advanced FHA, MI, and, of course, the Big C Compliance, we have a terrific list of speakers, including David Lickin, who's going to be our Tuesday luncheon keynote speaker. We also have Steve Wiley, who's the executive director of the Lincoln Leadership Institute at Gettysburg. He is a fabulous speaker with a tremendous message. And that evening at our banquet is Deborah Still, as she prefers, chairman of the National Mortgage Bankers Association. So those dates are April 8th and 9th. Our website is www.OklahomaMortgageBankersAssociation.com.
That is great. I'm looking forward to being up there. Keep the snow away. We don't need any more of that. And I'm looking forward to meeting Deb. And of course, you have one of my favorites, Steve Wiley. He is just such a dynamic speaker. So it'll be a great session. I encourage you all to go out there and register for this conference. Ken, thank you so much for stepping out of your lunch you've got going there to join us today. Have a blessed day up there, my friend.
Thank you. We're looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, David.
Can't wait.
Have a good day.
I just booked my flight. I'll be there. Looking forward to it. All right.
Yes, sir. Well, all right.
We are excited also to have as our special sponsor, United Guarantee. They're on their 50th wedding anniversary. Well, you know, it's a wedding anytime you're part of the industry. It's their 50th anniversary of being in business. We're excited to have them as a sponsor. It's a great company. We've been talking about reaching out and getting to know some of their people. There's one individual that I've met that I really like, Susan King, who is regional vice president of the Heartland region. And I want to just give a shout out to Susan and to Susan King, and got a chance to meet her, Alice, up in your neck of the woods at the last Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association. So there's a good group of people there at United Guarantee. Encourage you to reach out, get to know one of the rep that's in your area, and get to know their products and services. Great group, and they're one of the strong ones out there. And, boy, I tell you, we need mortgage insurance. But let's get into what's going on as far as what's happening in the markets. Joe Farr, good to have you with us. What do you have today? Cypress still messing things up?
You know, it started last Monday, and it's raised its ugly head again today. Actually, I say ugly. It's good for mortgage rates, right? But not so good for stocks.
Yeah.
But, yes, it's in the news again today because they have announced their resolution, and it's not a pretty one if you're a depositor of money in Greece, especially if you're a Russian depositor of money in Greece. Not Greece, in Cyprus. The European Union has basically taken a new position in regards to banks and resolving banks, and it's taken effect in Cyprus now, but the concerns throughout the region are what impact will it have as other banks need help. And And basically what they've said is, we're not going to bail you out anymore. You know, it's kind of a good thing in that they feel strong enough in their overall financial security that they can say this.
Right.
And it's not a bad thing. You know, it's, if you have money deposited in a bank and it's a weak bank, you need to be at, you're at risk. And maybe you're getting a higher return because you have money in that bank. And you know, there's a risk that goes along with the return. So what they have said is that we're going to honor insured deposits. There will be no consequence to insured depositors. And that it happens to be 100,000 euro. Anyone with deposits over that is likely to be have money taken, as much as 70%, Dave, 30 to 70%.
Wow. Just
so, yeah, you can imagine how you'd feel if you were a Russian oligarch that's got lots of money in the bank and it's going to go away.
Wow.
I don't think I'd want to be one of the officials making that call.
Well, like also you say, it's the precedence that it sets around the other potential bank failures. So.
Well, it really is. And you know, today, this morning, we started off lower in mortgage-backed securities and higher in stocks. And that was sort of, Cyprus has fixed their problem. As people started hearing more about the solution and how it might affect other places, we've seen a big turnaround. We started down 6.30 seconds. We're now up 3.30 seconds on MBS prices. Stocks started out higher. We're now down 100 points on the stock market in the Dow. So, you know, the uncertainty about Europe is growing again. This solution adds a lot of ramifications throughout other regions, other countries. There are riots going on in Cyprus right now as part of the solution is European Union's told Cyprus, you got to close down one bank and you've got to severely reduce the size of another. Well, those banks are the biggest employers there. That is most of what they do. And so there's a real negative consequence inside Cyprus that even though the deposits are insured, jobs are going to be lost. So it's a big event, and it's not so much the Cyprus issue, but how it might affect other countries, and so we're going to have to keep our eyes on that. But that's affecting the market today.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about last week, so.
Yeah, I mean, last week it started off good as people were concerned about Cyprus, and they shifted assets into safe investments like MBS and Treasury. And on Monday, MBS prices were up 10-30 seconds, combination Monday and Tuesday. And then the Fed statement, the Fed meeting happened. The Fed statement came out and the Fed press conference followed, and MBS prices kind of turned the other way after the during the press conference. And what was basically learned in that press conference is that there is likely to be an earlier than expected indication of what the Fed's going to do, meaning as the Fed's been buying MBS securities, they've been buying it at $40 billion a month and plan to do so until unemployment fell below 6.5%, so long as inflation wasn't over 2.5%, right?
Right.
Now they're saying we're likely to start that process in small increments, little baby steps along the way. We might go from $40 billion a month to, they didn't say this, but, you know, they might go from $40 billion to $35 billion. Well, that's an indication they're moving in a direction. And that first indication is likely to occur much earlier than expected. And so how much is the market going to react when that first indication comes? As a result, MBS prices fell during the press conference and because the Fed's a big buyer and they take away that demand. And you know, you don't want to be the guy left holding the bag as the Fed stops buying MBS. So the Fed was a big component of prices during the week. So what happened early was good. Fed caused things to pull back. And in the end, the week was, you know, slightly good for MBS, but not a big movement one way or the other. The economic news last week had almost no impact on prices. What also happened last week was both the House and the Senate passed continuing resolution bills that will fund the government through the end of September so that that March 27th deadline is off the table. Yep. But, boy, they sure set up a mess of a fight coming up on the budget, didn't they? I mean,
oh, they did.
The Republicans say we're going to balance the budget on no new taxes within 10 years. The Democrats say we're going to raise $1 trillion in new taxes. We're still not going to balance the budget, but we're going to be happy.
Yeah.
So we'll see how all that plays out. But it's nice to see that one deadline's been extended. At least there's not the March 27th deadline anymore. And then during this week, Dave, you know, there's not a lot of economic news to speak of that you'd expect to move things around. Herbal Orders comes out tomorrow, and some housing data comes out tomorrow and Wednesday, and PCE comes out on Friday. But I think, again, the market's going to be kind of focused on Europe and what kind of movement occurs as a result of further interpretations and actual events that might occur in, you know, weaker countries like Spain and Italy.
Well, it is interesting to see what will happen. There's a lot of things not necessarily in the economic calendar that can impact the pricing here. So
I think what we've learned is you never know what's going to do it and when it's going to do it.
Yeah. From which side, the Asia or will it come out of Europe again? So a lot on that. You got to have the system called MBS Quote Line. You want to learn about it? Stay tuned, listen to this message, figure out you can get your free trial if you're not a member already. Here, stay tuned. Listen to this.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. Remember, we got Bill Kilmer coming up here in just a little bit in the Hot Topic segment. Looking forward to hearing his comments about all that's going on inside the Beltway. My gosh, how does that guy keep on top of everything? Also, we've got Paul Mallow right after following up after Alice Alvey's update here. So stay tuned. Got a whole lineup. Good stuff this week. Alice Alvey, good to have you back. And again, thanks for running that broadcast for me a few weeks ago, but it's good to have you here. What do you have for us? More HR bills and hot notes.
Well, lots of bills, yeah, but I'm going to run through it quick because I know we want to make sure we get to Bill. But, you know, really good news. I know I'm doing a lot of speaking on compliance these days to both salespeople and operations groups and trying to calm people down and help them see the light. You know, it's
right.
Not bad. Yes, there's a train, but, you know, I think we can handle it with bills like this. So here we have House Bill 1077 that was actually introduced a little over a week ago. You know, people in Michigan, we know mortgages, so it was our Michigan rep, Bill Hazinga, consumer mortgage choice. The good news is this bill is proposing to adjust what we know about QM so far. So right now we say with the qualified mortgage, the definition appears to definitely be including loan level price adjustments for this 3 points test, as well as we're still waiting for clarification on how loan originator compensation might or might not be included in that 3 point test. This bill is saying loan-level price adjustments and should not be included, and that very clearly employer compensation paid to an originator should also not be included. I think everybody's got to get behind this in this industry and make it known that we think this is a good start. Certainly we're going to attack it from all angles. I know MBA has their efforts too, but it's House Bill 1077. We are all for this. Get out there and get your voices heard, folks. We are also watching, as usual, every year we get a version of an FHA Fiscal Insolvency Act bill, and so here it is for 2013. it really does kind of the same things as previous attempts at trying to get something like this approved. It does try to allow for a bigger increase in the annual MIP, just tries to improve control over some servicer activities. And also, though, in this one, they want more reporting from FHA. So I'm going to save you all the details on this bill today. If you want some more information on it, don't hesitate to give me a call or send me an email. But it is one to watch because FHA could definitely benefit from having more authority to get rid of some more bad actors within the FHA program. So definitely great parts within House Bill 1145. We also, of course, you know, are watching to see what happens with the CFPB director, which I think we can get some more information from Bill Kilmer when he gets on the program later. Last but not least, a couple reminders. Last Monday, March 18th, HUD's disparate impact rule went into effect. So those of you who are on the compliance side, fair lending is now a three-part burden-shifting test. The plaintiff first has to make a case, which they don't have to have a whole lot of substance. They've just got to make it seem like there's enough merit. Then as a lender, we now are in the position of having to prove that there wasn't any type of negative impact. And even after we prove that, the defendant still has the ability to continue with the case if they have additional proof to the contrary, that maybe there were alternative products that could have helped consumers differently. So we now at least have a formal framework to work within instead of inconsistencies that were going on in some of the courts. So make sure your group's all aware of that. That went into effect last week. And then, of course, we're watching May 1st. I've talked to a few lenders already. They're ready for the change in the $1 million net worth requirement for FHA loans. And I'm sure, Dave, you guys are helping people with that transition as well. So my news for today.
Good, good. In fact, we've got a lot of people can't get the additional net worth in, so they're merging and acquisitions. And we're going to have Jeff Klein on, my business partner. Andy's on, my business partner, talking about M&A. He's one of the guys who knows M&A probably the best in the country. He's done some of the biggest deals, highly regarded. And we have got him coming on the broadcast on the 8th, April 8th, to talk about M&A. So good stuff. Alice, thank you so much. Appreciate you being with us. Again, folks, stay tuned. Bill Kilmer coming up in a little bit. And next, right after this ad, we're going to be on with Paul Mollo. Be right back. Stay tuned.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back. We have Paul Mollo on the line. Paul, good to have you with us. And for those many of you who do not know, he made the transition from National Mortgage News, where we've always read and loved what he's read. And he's now writing for Guy Sakala over there.
Sakala.
Man, oh, man.
I hope he's not listening.
I hope he's not either. But I apologize, Guy, for slaughtering that. I know that better. So anyway, getting my brain ahead of my mouth, I guess, what it is. Anyway, Paul, good to have you with us. And I tell you, I'm excited. I really enjoy you reading your new blog. That is what you and Guy have launched there is outstanding. Give us a little bit of what's on the blog that you're writing about and what we can anticipate hearing this week.
Well, it's a news service / blog, and it's called imfnews.com, so that's easy to find, imfnews.com. Well, you know, we're daily, four to five new fresh stories every day, and then we also have some shorter items called short takes, sort of gossipy kind of stuff, and shorter news items. So anyway, well, you know, over the weekend, the Senate passed its first budget in something like 4 years. One of the amendments that got tacked in is the an amendment from Crapo and Johnson, which basically says you cannot hike G fees and use that money for non-housing, non-GSE purposes. That's sort of considered a win for the industry, I guess. So that's one of the things that happened over the weekend. We also have news of John Dorio, a subprime veteran who used to run Encore. He told us recently that he raised $100 million in investor money, and that's interesting because about 2 weeks ago we broke the news about Citadel Loan Servicing raising $200 million. That's a real capital raise.
Yeah.
Dan Pearl and Citadel raised $200 million, and then there's another company out there called Deep Haven Mortgage. It's run by a former Goldman Sachs official, and he wouldn't talk to us, but we've heard he may have raised as much as $500 million. So the news is that non-prime lending could be back, but it's a different kind of non-prime lending. This is a non-prime lending from yesteryear where they made, equity lending. You had to have equity in the house.
Right.
They closely underwrite the loans. They service them themselves, the LTVs. Tend to be pretty low. We're not talking about 100% or even 90% LTVs here. We're talking more, 50, 60, 70%. So that's a very interesting development in the market.
Very significant. Very significant. Well, you do break a lot of stories, Paul, and I think there's so many people that are so well, versed on you and you have read your articles for years. But I'm really excited about this blog. And I tell you, folks, if you have not checked it out, you need to go check that out. It, by the way, it's also free. That's the best part. He's publishing this free, and, of course, it just gives you opportunity to get to know Inside Mortgage Finance and all that Guy has been doing so successfully for, gosh, how many years has he been doing the Inside Mortgage Finance?
I think he's 29 going on 30.
I know.
So it's imfnews.com. Another story we had this week in the weekly and rankings and all that has to do with more banks and thrifts holding on to their mortgages as opposed to selling them in the secondary market. There was a slight uptick, about 2.3% from the end of 2011 compared to the end of 2012. So it's interesting. Banks are, thinking, why don't I just keep these loans? So who knows? 30-year fixed-rate mortgages, borrow short, lending long. We'll see what happens.
Well, we've been through that before, haven't we, Paul?
Yeah. Let's keep doing it. It gives us something to write about.
At least you can pull some of those old stories from the SNL crisis and bring them out and dust them off and go, hey, maybe able to use this stuff again.
We could. And we also have an item in today's web feed or blog or whatever you want to call it about Phyllis Caldwell. Her name's come up as a candidate for the FHFA job. Right now, the name everyone keeps hearing is Mel Watt, Congressman Watt.
Yeah.
And, right now, there's a lot of people in Washington who are quite happy with the job Ed DeMarco's doing.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't look like the White House is making this a huge priority right now. We had the vote last week on Cordray to be the CFPB chief, and that's maybe taking up the political capital of the White House right now. So, that's what's going on with the agencies. And, there's a lot of stuff out there. There's talk about, loan quality standards. There were some rumors that some lenders are, loosening their standards somewhat to try and make up for what they feel will be a lack of refis down the road as rates tick up a little and refis slow. But, I checked around this morning with a couple of different lenders, and no one's really seen much of an evidence on loan standards, easing at all. So we'll
see.
And this is all coming at a time, by the way, when housing is starting to get real tight. You hear about multiple bids on homes in many red-hot markets. And, lo and behold, some people don't have the ability to get a mortgage because loan standards are too tight. So it's almost a catch-22.
It's interesting where we find ourselves. We need a recovery. We need the loan programs, but we sure don't want to return to the old days, Paul. So I appreciate you taking time. It's so good to have you be a part of the broadcast. We appreciate you taking time out and from your computer to step over here and give us some color and commentary. Thank you so much, Paul.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Hey, hi to Guy and everyone there. Appreciate it. Another person that we enjoy having with us on a regular basis is Tony Garitano, and Tony has got some updates. In fact, he used to be with National Mortgage News. There's a lot of ex-National Mortgage News folks, so Tony, it's good to have. Well, I guess you worked on the technology side when you were reporting a lot of that, were you not?
Yeah, I was the technology reporter for National Mortgage News and the editor of Mortgage Technology Magazine.
Well, now you got Progress in Lending. It's doing extremely well, and I want to talk about all the new regulations and the impact that it is having in the best of breed versus the end-to-end technology debate. That's really an ongoing debate. What you got for us on that?
It is. I think I wanted to provide a little different perspective on this debate, Dave. I think that when people are faced with these new regulatory, this new regulatory landscape and the new rules that are going to hit us in the future, the consensus is that lenders are leaning more on technology, and we're seeing that in the record number of loan origination system conversions that are happening right now.
Right.
But I think what's interesting is the loan origination systems are also leaning on technology as well, and we're seeing more integrations happening that are tighter and more data-driven. So I think that the loan origination system is certainly going to remain the system of record, but new compliance is also forcing loan origination systems to look to best-of-breed providers more and more.
Are there any good examples of how the best-of-breed approach is working or really working?
I heard this news this morning, Dave, about Rooms Mortgage, which is a collaborative paperless solution from Cogent Road,
right.
And they're integrating with Closing Corp to automate the calcs around the GFE. So I thought that was kind of unique
that
in
is.
That they're pulling the data in at certain points to make sure that the calcs are there and that they're in compliance at the point of sale and at closing. And it's an interesting integration that's very tight, that's totally data-driven, that's solving an industry issue that's new, because lenders are now on the hook for these calcs and they have to be within a certain variation, and that's certainly new. And we were hoping that technology would come in and help that process. And this is just one example of how a really tight integration with best-of-breed partners can work to solve a really interesting and new problem that lenders face.
I want to get back into this more next week. If you could talk more next week about the end-to-end technology debate, and I think that's really interesting because there seems to be a trend going back more to the less multiple systems. Let's get one technology solution. Just too much going on to keep track of, and I think that I can get there. So let's get back to that next week. Appreciate you, Tony, being a part of it. You've got an event coming up here at the technology or right around the technology conference. Give us a quick word on that.
We do. I mean, every year the Board of Directors of Progress in Lending picks what we think are the top innovations of the last 12 months. So on April 14th in Hollywood, Florida, at the Crown Plaza, starting at 7 o'clock, Progress in Lending Association will announce the top technology innovations of the past 12 months. And we'll be giving out trophies and honoring people and hopefully championing the cause of innovation, because we need to innovate.
We do. Thank you so much, Tony, for being a part of the broadcast today. Appreciate it. I know. And more snow's coming your way, so get your generator running.
Thank you, Dave.
I know you guys have been hit with so much of it. Appreciate it, Tony. Have a blessed day.
Bye now.
Let's get over to the Profit Doctor. The Profit Doctor is in the house, and he's got a webinar coming up with Campus MBA. Profit Doctor, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we've got a Campus MBA webinar coming up starting in a couple of weeks. It's going to walk people through the details of loan accounting, hedging for mortgage banking transactions, along with the reporting of financial derivatives that are generated as a result of mortgage banking activities. One of the things that's interesting about this, Dave, is that every time a mortgage bank issues an interest rate lock commitment,
yeah.
that interest rate lock commitment is an off-balance sheet financial commitment. It's an off-balance sheet financial commitment that has market risk, and off-balance sheet interest rate commitment with financial market risk is considered a derivative under GAAP, and it's reportable as such under GAAP. And the reason this is becoming more and more evident these days is that it kind of reminds me a little bit of Santa Claus.
How is that related to Santa Claus? Can't wait.
Well,
Alice, he does this all the time.
Well, first off, Dave, it's March, so it's a little bit late for Santa Claus, a little bit early for Santa Claus. But, you know, I don't think it's ever too early or too late to talk about Santa Claus because I love Santa Claus. I love Christmas.
I
love being Santa Claus for my kids. So, but anyway, what is the thing that Santa Claus does? He gets his list. And what does he do with his list?
Checks it once and checks
it twice. Santa Claus checks his list twice. Exactly. And we in mortgage banking, we need to be really careful that we're checking our list twice. So what's happening is that we're getting calls from commercial banks several times a week now wanting help with checking their list, checking their financial reporting details that they're sending off to the government. And they're having to deal with interest rate lock commitments and the derivatives that are generated from that activity. Well, guess what mortgage bankers do? Mortgage bankers generate interest rate lock commitments every day, and every time they do, they generate a derivative event. Every derivative event at the balance sheet reporting date, which is month end, has to be reported in the call report, the FC section of the call report for every quarter. And if you're doing it year end, it has to be in your GAAP financial statements.
Right.
And just because it's a best efforts delivery doesn't mean it's not a derivative. We hear CPAs giving advice on this that's not accurate. Just because it's the best efforts doesn't mean that it's not reported. It has to be reported because the structure of the hedge makes no difference as it relates to the characteristic of the interest rate lock commitment being a derivative transaction that generates a derivative asset that has to be reported. So, anyway.
So we got the webinar. They can learn about it. Alice just put a post up here. Alice, you got to share that.
Well, I was with the MMLA at a luncheon event, and I had one of my customers come up to me, and, you know, we talked about the May 1st deadline for net worth. They said, I attended Andy Schell's webinars, and that was the perfect launching point. I have stuck with Andy's program, and we are there. I love the new profits. He was just raving about your work, Andy, so I wanted to share that with you.
Hey, Alice. That's always great to hear.
Okay, Andy, give us the deadline on these. I want to get to Bill Kilmer here coming up just a moment after this ad break, but give us a quick, where can they learn about it and what are the dates?
Well, go to Campus MBA, go to mortgagebankers.org, jump over to the education, go to Campus MBA, look up Campus MBA. It's easy to find, and there you'll find the listing of the webinars that Campus MBA offers, which are many. Campus MBA has lots and lots of training opportunities for folks, and the accounting series is coming up starting on April the 10th. So it's a couple of weeks away, still time for people to register, get in there. And
don't wait till the last minute.
Don't wait till the last minute. It's a very nominal fee to attend. It's a four-series class. At the end of the series, you'll know about loan accounting, profitability by branch, by originator, by loan, by product, and that means you can then do your financial condition report correctly. And if you're in hedging, which everybody needs to be because of the financial benefits of doing that of 30 to 60 basis points pick up by doing short-term mandatory deliveries instead of the longer best efforts deliveries. It gets complicated, but we go through it all. We talk about it.
We talk about
the theory behind it, all the what happens, along with the accounting entries that have to be done. So that's coming up pretty soon, Dave.
And one of the things that you're most famous for is making the complicated topics and complemented aspects of our industry. You make it easy to understand. Great webinar. It's backed by popular demand. Fourth time you're doing this, Andy? Third or fourth?
Yeah, they're about. Yeah,
that's great.
Like that.
Wow, that's good. Well, folks, stay tuned. Right after this message, we're going to have Bill Kilmer on here giving us an update on everything that's going on at the MBA, especially with what GSEs, FHA. My gosh, so much track to track and stay on top of. He'll be right with us after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzeltrot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzeltrot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzeltrot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzeltrot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzeltrot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzeltrot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
And we're back with Bill Kilmer, live from Washington, D.C. He was just out here in Austin last week and didn't get a chance to connect with him. But Bill is the Senior Vice President for Legislative and Political Affairs for the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. He is a 20-year veteran of the housing industry. He joined the MBA in July of 2010 after serving nearly 10 years as Executive Vice President for Advocacy at the National Association of Home Builders. I could go on and on. He really doesn't need much of an introduction. Bill is well known through many of you as he travels around the country and is actively involved, as he was last week, with each of the local state associations working on the legislative initiatives. Bill, good to have you on the broadcast.
Thanks, David. Glad to be with you.
Well, I think a lot of people say, well, we just heard from Steve O'Connor the other day, and so I think a lot of people, I want to kind of help everyone understand the difference between the roles. Steve did a great job. Alice ran the broadcast during that time, and I listened to it. It was a lot of great information, but so people can kind of understand the difference of the roles. I thought we'd start by explaining what you do and what Steve does, and we need both of you actively there all the time.
Well, I appreciate that, David. Steve and his team, along with a lot of the other subject matter experts here at MBA, have their hands full. Just with Dodd-Frank as an example, 250 regulations, a 2,300-page bill, and here we are in the midst of kind of the month of January with six mortgage rules coming due and online, and then more to come. And we're referring to this in 2013 as the year of regulatory implementation. So he and his team keep their eye on those rules and everything that's flowing from the Federal Register that has an impact on the industry. And there's been plenty of work in that regard. The work that I do is focused on Capitol Hill and managing the industry's political capital as we try to maneuver and obviously using the Congress as a megaphone in this regulatory dialogue is important, but also some of the issues that you referred to in the lead up to our segment now that are percolating on the Hill and that we may see some action from here in the next year or perhaps over the next two or three.
Well, one of the big ones is, GSE reform, and given all the other activities consuming both the House and both chambers of Congress, what is the likelihood of something happening in the way of reform with the GSEs?
Well, I think that's still a longer-term proposition, David. You have elections, and elections have impacts, and they matter. And certainly the president got reelected, and his administration had put forward three options for GSE reform in February of 2011 as they were directed to under Dodd-Frank. That was more of a skeleton or a framework for what the Congress might pursue. I don't think any of us would have thought that 4 years into conservatorship that we wouldn't have had some action on reforming Fannie and Freddie or the federal home loan banks, but here we sit. And as we are on the edge of this housing recovery, Fannie and Freddie are more profitable than they have been, but yet I still think there is a strong interest in a Republican House to try to transition away from Fannie and Freddie and move to a totally private mortgage market. The elections in the Senate left the Democrats in control, and they, in fact, increased their majority. And there have been some bipartisan winds blowing in the Senate Banking Committee, and so we talked about Senator Johnson as chairman of that committee, and then Senator Crapo, who's the ranking Republican, and what they got done on G fees and the Senate budget that was just passed. And they've shown a willingness in some hearings to date to try to work together. This is one of the issues that that they may want to work on. I think the Senate Banking Committee and Democrats generally are going to try to right-size the role of the GSEs or some successor entities and try to find a way to crowd more private capital into the system, but not move totally away from a 30-year fixed mortgage or some form of government guarantee.
And before we get off of the GSEs, I want to open this up for some of our other regulars on the broadcast to jump in on some of the GSE questions.
Well, Dave, this is Joe.
Joe.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, along those lines, I wanted to ask if there is, the fact right now is that the government sets basically sets underwriting guidelines and is therefore, saying what loans can and cannot be made. And is that a control that you see the government ever giving up? I mean, that with that ability comes the ability to socially engineer things and to really be in control of the market.
Well, Joe, I think it's a matter of how we transition from, the void that Fannie and Freddie have had to fill with the meltdown that we've come out of. And you're absolutely right. With the qualified mortgage rule coming online, certainly there's a more defined role for how government is setting the underwriting guidelines in that regulation. And part of that is codifying, if you will, the use of the underwriting engines of Fannie and Freddie. And so the importance here is finding the right tipping point, and at what point, if you create a new system, can you transition into perhaps less of a role in underwriting or participation in the mortgage space. I think all parties, certainly Democrats and Republicans, and all the industry observers agree that we have far too much explicit government involvement with Fannie, Freddie, and FHA right now in terms of its size of market share, and we've got to get to a healthier point.
Well, great point. Good stuff. Well, first, hey, Jim, thanks for being on the call today. And had a quick point about your background. I just was looking at your resume, and it's Baylor Bears. Bill, you went to Baylor University.
I was wondering
University.
If you were bringing that up.
I had to. I've got all my kids so far have gone to Baylor, and I bleed red for the money that I've spent there, and green and gold otherwise.
Well, Sikkim, there was an old quarterback in Washington named Billy Kilmer. I can assure you that there are people more focused on the health of Robert Griffin III than they are on how my knee is doing in our nation's capital. But
that's funny. Well, Bill, thanks for being on the program. I was looking at the list of questions and all the things that are going on and the actuarial report that just came out and what we're going to do about that and what it means. And, in 2007-8, when subprime went away, FHA kind of became the subprime option people had, and so we're surprised that there's been a decline in the fund. But what are your thoughts on the current state of the actuarial report and how this is going to affect FHA?
Well, I think it's getting past the tail of those bad book years that you mentioned. I think it's probably more useful to think about where we would have been without FHA stepping in and playing the countercyclical role that it was intended to play in those times of stress and crisis. I do think Alice mentioned some FHA legislation in her report. That'll probably be the floor of consideration for what's going on. And again, I point to a little bipartisanship here in the Senate. At least at the banking committee level, both Democrats and Republicans are kind of canvassing members of that committee to see, what options they may want to pursue. And I do see the Senate acting, and obviously they're going to take great input from HUD in terms of what HUD sees as a way to, shore up capital reserves, but also give them a little more flexibility and transition to a little bit smaller role over time. I think at MBA, we're focused on trying to ensure the long-term sustainability and viability of FHA. And you contrast what the House might do, where you've got a new chairman in Jeb Hensarling as chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. You can expect him to take a little bit sharper edge on FHA reform. That'll contemplate a greater role for PMI and couple that with a mix of tighter lender enforcement and perhaps trying to offer higher down payment requirements as part of that mix. credit overlays, lower loan limits, and some attempts at risk sharing. So how you reconcile those two approaches and the role the administration plays in trying to broker getting something done, that'll play a big role in terms of something being done later this year, perhaps, or even in the next year. I think the importance here is to make sure that we're ensuring credit availability and credit access. We don't want to heighten enforcement to such a degree with what lenders are facing in the marketplace that they're going to clamp down and that consumers are actually going to be the ones who lose in that scenario. So it's a careful mix that we're going to have to pursue here to try to get things right on FHA.
Well, you got a big role there. Oh, sorry, Alice, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just going to jump in on the FHA part. So Bill, you know, I was it really that strong of enforcement that they're looking for? To me, it looks like just a few changes in some words within the enforcement provisions now to move from origination to be able to at least out of the origination agreement world into, you know, really go after an entire lender, because everybody knows how people manipulate lender ID numbers.
Well, I understand, but given the environment with false claims liability out there and the potential for treble damages, it is a few words, Alice, but, you know, mays and shalls and commas and semicolons are important in terms
of the,
I wouldn't have a job, I suppose, but I in terms of the enforcement authority that they can convey, and we at MBA clearly, you know, have no time for bad actors, and HUD clearly needs to have the capacity to go after indemnification risk and to hold bad actors accountable. Our concern is that you're going to scare people away from lending in this space because, you know, with all this regulatory overlay, the fear is, you can make lenders do a lot, but you can't make them offer loans. And as we get to this, transition from the refi boom to needing more help on primary originations, we don't want this to be one of the reasons that a housing recovery may not get totally off the ground.
Right.
Joe, let's go over to you.
Okay. Bill, earlier you mentioned that the Senate had proposed a way to protect using G-fees to pay for things in the future. And I do know that the Senate budget includes $1 trillion of new taxes over the next 10 years. Is the mortgage interest deduction at risk? Is that one of the ways that they're planning to raise that $1 trillion?
Well, that certainly is one of the things that is going to be on the table. I mean, let's face it, we've got a $17 trillion hole that ultimately, if the Congress and the administration were trying to plug, that's the breadth of the problem, and we're spending $1 trillion more than we take in every year. So it's axiomatic that housing tax incentives, including the mortgage interest deduction, would be part of that conversation. So anytime you hear people talking about tightening or closing loopholes, incentives or provisions that impact real estate are part of that mix. We're in a curious place in Washington. The House and the Senate have now actually passed budgets. I'll tell you from my seat, that's largely a political exercise. I don't think you're going to see Patty Murray's budget, the Senate passed budget, reconciled with Paul Ryan's budget anytime soon. It does lay out a marker for each of the respective parties to work within as they continue this debate. You also have seen the administration wait an inordinately long time to offer its budget blueprint. Typically, that happens when a president comes up to Capitol Hill to give his State of the Union address, which President Obama did in February. We're waiting here towards the end of this week and, you know, perhaps a little later for the administration to offer its budget. I think they'll probably, as they have in past years, say they want to cap deductions and limit them at a $250,000 adjusted gross income threshold, and mortgage interest deduction would be a part of that mix. This will really get vindicated as an issue if the Congress ever gets around with the administration to seriously pursuing tax reform, in which case – you know, you have to examine trade-offs and come up with revenue to pay for flattening rates, whether those are individual or corporate rates. So it's going to be a point of discussion for sure. And, we don't need another element of uncertainty here. There is a psychology that relates to the mortgage interest deduction and whether buyers believe that it's time to, you know, get off the sidelines and get in the game. And you have to be very, very cognizant throughout the debate what those tipping points are going to be.
So, Bill, you brought up the, you know, that what the president normally would bring in the budget at the beginning, you know, back in at the State of the Union. So can I go back to the State of the Union? Said he brought up mass mortgage refinance legislation, too. Is there anything moving on that, right? We're supposed to be limited docs, give everybody a, you know, give everybody a loan.
Sure, he's talked about that really in the last two State of the Unions, and it did so in 2012. You had legislation that was offered by Senators Menendez, Bob Menendez from New Jersey, and Senator Barbara Boxer from California. In a lot of ways, it was meant to be a refinement and an extension of the HARP 2.0 program, which FHFA administers, and which they're the ones who came up, Ed DeMarco and FHFA, with the guidelines for the 2.0 iteration of HARP after the administration moved on that program, expanding the program to some degree. But that, of course, was for the population of GSE-eligible loans that have been part of HARP all along. Mm-hmm. What the president's been alluding to, and he mentioned this, never got any traction because, frankly, they were proposing using FHA as the guarantor. What he's proposed, again, is additional coverage for private label MBS so that you could broaden potentially the relief that would come to borrowers. And, you know, the politics of the election made it impossible for anything to happen in 2012. I mean, obviously, you know, if you can help people that have been underwater or anyone who has been locked out of the benefits from refinancing, that's a good thing for the industry to examine, as long as there aren't perverse investor impacts. And I think adding this PLS component makes it a little bit harder. Certainly, we're not going to be talking about FHA as the guarantor, given these solvency concerns that we have. So Then you're talking about potentially amending the charters of the GSEs, and I've already explained how complicated it might be to get around to GSE reform. So this is not an easy task, but if you can find a way to couple that with some other proposals that might be moving, then it's always possible. And the Senate Banking Committee has talked about moving the Menendez-Boxer legislation out of committee, and that may be a start to the process.
All right. Well, we'll start watching that for our listeners and make sure we follow it, see what happens. So on that same front, just with Dodd-Frank, obviously we're watching to see if there will be any changes made with Dodd-Frank. They talk about various aspects in terms of creating a panel as opposed to one person. I always love to watch the one-line bill that says repeal Dodd-Frank as a whole. It's always just fun to see that it has zero chance of going anywhere. But hey, so tell us about Dodd-Frank.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, Congressman Frank has retired. And you have a new ranking Democrat in the House. That's Maxine Waters from California. She's well known in the mortgage industry circles, and she's certainly a strong and classic liberal. She does have a willingness to work with industry, and just the fact that she is sitting behind that dais now, and Congressman Frank and both Senator Dodd are now retired from the Congress, I think makes it easier for the committees of jurisdiction to think about technical corrections to Dodd-Frank. Repeal was always kind of a pipe dream,
right.
And you know, even if Governor Romney had somehow been able to be elected, which was obviously not the case, he was never really going to have a capacity to do that as well. So you have seen, and particularly in the Senate, a willingness to contemplate, if there's broad bipartisan consensus, some surgical corrections. And in my almost 30 years in Washington, if you write a 2,300-page bill, there are bound to be aspects of that that need to go back and be revisited. And we're right in the teeth of implementation now. So, you know, do I think your example of the CFPB and changing its governance and perhaps broadening from a directorate to a five-person commission? That's probably so politically controversial that's a tougher row to hoe. Unless Rich Cordray were to indicate that he personally, as an independent director of an agency, was willing to contemplate some of that. And, you know, this was mentioned earlier in the show. He's been reported out of the banking committee. He certainly has been renominated after the recess appointment by the president. I don't see him being confirmed by the full Senate absent showing a willingness to make some of those compromises, because both Democrats and Republicans are pretty dug in on either preserving the status quo at CFPB in terms of governance or seeking some of those changes, making CFPB tied to the appropriations process as opposed to getting its funding from the Federal Reserve. So I think more of the same there. Interestingly, CFPB has shown a pretty good willingness to be transparent and work with industry, but it's a powerful, powerful agency with an awful lot of authority.
What is the number one initiative that you're working on, Bill, right now that's got your attention and time and say that we should all be really focused on?
Well, I appreciate that question, David, and I meant to mention this up top, and that's a great segue. As we're here in the maelstrom in this year of implementation, clearly people are wondering how that's going to impact, how these rules and the compliance requirements are going to impact their business model and their hiring and their business practices. And so we at MBA know we've got an obligation to help mortgage professionals understand the impact of all those rules. And so specifically on that score, Campus MBA has launched what we call MBA Compliance Essentials, and that's a broad new program from our education department that we hope will position your company to comply with current and coming rules. We're going to hold a very comprehensive series of webinars and related resource guides that will provide a base on which to build your own compliance programs and develop the essential policies and procedures necessary to support it. And if you'd like more information about that, you can go to www.campusmba.org/compliance. And I know that's a shameless plug, but I think it's one that's timely
absolutely.
For people that are out here on the show.
There's no question that compliance is the biggest issue. That's why I look at Alice. If there was ever a time where there is Alice has got job security with all that she's doing, Campus MBA, we can't have enough resources out there going at that. We had Jay Brinkman on the broadcast last week or last year talking about the MBA's proposal, the McGee's. I thought it was great. And, of course, Jay, as you well know, is just so much fun to have on and is as informative as he is entertaining. Is there any chance of anything happening with the MBA's proposal?
Well, I got to tell you, there's something happening now. We've really kind of recommissioned a new blue ribbon panel from the industry on a task force, and we're refreshing a lot of those concepts that Jay shared with you. I think there's a lot of similarity from other groups, other industry groups, and then there's been a bipartisan commission that has taken a comprehensive look at housing policy. They've come forward with a lot of housing expertise and put a platform that is very similar to MBA's previous proposal. I think the silver bullet, if you will, that'll make a difference for the debate to start would be how much capital the administration is willing to spend. You've got a new Treasury Department, a lot of folks in flux there, even in their housing team, a new secretary in Jack Lew. And, you know, if they make this a priority, then I think that will be the leadership the Hill might need to kind of get off the dime. But, you know, if you had a gun to my head, I'd tell you this is probably a 3 or 4 year proposition still.
Yeah, I can absolutely buy it. Well, appreciate so much you taking time out of your busy day. People can get involved. You're traveling around the country. You were here last week in Austin, Texas, working with the Texas Mortgage Bankers Association. If people want to get a hold of you and get you involved in things that they're working on or get advice and get direction as to where to go, how can they get a hold of you, Bill?
Well, you can always drop me an email at BKLLMER@mortgagebankers.org. I'm only an email away. The other thing that I'd encourage folks to do to help me be your constituent by proxy with all the other professionals here at MBA is to join our Mortgage Action Alliance, what we call MAA, and you can do that by going to www.mortgageactionalliance.org. And that's free, nonpartisan, and it'll allow us to let you know what's happening. That bill that Alice mentioned earlier that's a fix on the points and fees aspects of QM, H.R. 1077, we'll be sending an alert out, for example, urging people to weigh in with their congressman and try to get them to co-sponsor that legislation. And all you've got to do is join the Mortgage Action Alliance, and we'll have a more direct connection to you, and we'll be able to leverage all of the industry as we pursue priorities on your behalf. So as we like to say around here, the larger the group, the louder the voice, and I'd encourage everyone on to join.
I couldn't agree with you more. What's that website again?
www.mortgageactionalliance.org.
Make sure you do the org, not the com. You won't find it otherwise. Bill, thank you so much for taking time. You and Steve have just been outstanding, and I can't wait to get more on. I see your boss is off in Colorado again. He likes to go back to that state. We're both avid snow skiers, and I hear he's back into the snow. He made it through the snowstorm, got up in the mountains. So good for him. I appreciate it. Be sure to say hi to everyone. We do appreciate everything that you guys are doing there at the NBA to help keep our industry as healthy and strong as possible, Bill.
Well, thanks, David. I appreciate that. And I assure you, keeping up with Dave is a full-time proposition in and of itself. But it's been a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, it's good to have you. We look forward to having you back. Appreciate it so much. Folks, it's been so much fun to have you be a part with us again this week. We appreciate you telling others about the broadcast. So many of you are downloading the broadcast, and that is just such an effective way to listen to it. Again, when the head of Reuters News Service walked up to me and said, Dave, I downloaded your broadcast and listened to it on the subway into New York every time. That was just a real compliment. We got others that are doing it. Appreciate you telling others about it. I'm again, the conference in Oklahoma City. I'll be speaking there and would love to have you there. Other upcoming conference will be announced here shortly. Let's see here. I think that does it for us for this week. Next week, we're talking about loan origination and production. Great article in the MBA magazine, and we're going to have Pat Sherlock on to talk about it. Great for you to take a little time to be with us this week. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.